Welcome to Jesus-Centric Leadership. I'm Donna. I'm here with Pastor Josh and Thomas McLean. Good to see you.
Yeah, glad to be back. A third time. Wow.
But second in this conversation.
Yeah.
And I'd like you to kind of recap what we talked about in our last podcast last week. A little bit, just kind of an overview of what we were talking about.
Yeah, so we introduced this idea of gospel culture and just kind of started breaking down, like, what does that mean? And so what I've heard gospel culture to mean is it's three things equal gospel culture. So you add these all together, you get gospel culture. You get gospel plus safety plus time. And so safety, you need to be in like a safe church environment. That's safety to bring your sins, your burdens, but also safety to call out your church and like share your opinions about your church, and just a safe place, like freedom to share what you need to share. Time, Jesus isn't in a rush with you, and so we shouldn't be either. Like, there is time to grow, time to be safe, and time to just relish in Jesus and the gospel and all that. And so, and the gospel, all of it needs to be saturated with the gospel. You can go to any social group and be safe and have time to be safe, but if there's no gospel, if there's no love of Christ and gospel truths being poured into these things, then it's no different than your bar.
Pastor Josh, if we were to look at peace with Christ and you were to line those three up and kind of measure how we're doing, how would you say we're doing?
Yeah, I mean, you asked that before, and I don't know if I have anything any more profound to say, but I think there's ways.
It's a different episode.
It's a different episode, so ask to say the same question in a different way.
We can kind of bring everybody into the conversation.
Yeah, no, there's always ways that we can do better, and that's the thing that I love about gospel culture is I don't know that this is ever something you can put your finger on and say, oh, we've got this figured out and you should be like us. But rather, I think it's always something that we got to be growing on. How do we allow somebody to be more safe? Like, I've seen times where this has worked really, really well, where we have allowed people to be and ask questions and struggle with things. But I'm sure there's been times where this hasn't been a safe place for people to share where they're at. And so how do we keep growing in that? And I think it's not just that we as an organization would be able to function like that, or we as a ministry would be able to function, but how do we teach people and train people that they can bring their struggles here and they don't have to walk in the door asking, is my family put well together? Is my kids put well? Do I look nice enough today? Do I have it figured out? Can I put on this show for everybody? Like, how do we keep teaching people that they don't have to do that? Because I think our natural predisposition as Christians is to say, I've got it figured out. This is where I am. Look at me. And that, I think that the naturalness of us to want to hide who we are and hide our brokenness, I think fights against gospel culture.
Thomas, where does this fit? Is this a theory? Is this a strategy? Is this our new church motto? And I'm not asking you, I'm asking Pastor that, but yeah. What exactly is this?
It's culture, right? It's like it's gospel culture, and I think we can break it down as a theory and like really hone in on gospel safety time, each of those, but like how I see it is just, I don't know, maybe a philosophy of church or like part of a philosophy for church is like, hey, we strive to be gospel-centric and gospel-cultured church body. We strive to be a safe place for people to share their burdens and like truly share, not just say that this is a place to do it, but like practice that too. And like, this is a time, there's no rush here. And then it's fueled by the gospel, like, and we do that great of everything is saturated in Jesus. So that's how I see it more so, is just this philosophy and something that, at least for me, like, I'd try to ingrain it in myself and would just love for it to be ingrained in our culture as a church.
How are you currently ingraining it in the student ministry culture?
Yeah. My first week back, I kind of brought up this thing of gospel culture to the students and kept it on their mind, and the way we're practicing it does look like lately is like doing small group time and talking about the Bible there, but also making sure we spend time like talking about each other and how each other is doing. And so it looked like, hey, like everyone's got something going on, like whether you're, I don't know, everyone has something. And so we're gonna go around, whatever you feel comfortable sharing, like we're going to share that, and we're just going to pray for it. And if it's big, small, like, that's what we're going to do. And that was, I guess, practicing, like, hey, like, this is a safe place, like, whatever you want to share, like, maybe we got some softball answers. I don't remember. Like, school is always like the prayer request. Like, I need help with the test. Like, okay, like, we can pray for that always.
Because that's heavy on their mind.
Yeah. And like, that's what's going on in their lives. And it's just whatever. There wasn't any rules for what they had to bring to the table. Just like, hey, whatever you feel comfortable sharing, like, share, and we'll pray for it. And so that's how we've practiced it late, I guess, directly. And then just building it into the culture and care and like, because it's a day by day or week by week thing of like, hey, like, I'm glad you're here. Like, I'm glad you're back after a month or whatnot. And like, never making a student feel like an outcast of like, oh, I haven't been here forever. Or maybe I had a blow up last week or something. Like, you're always welcome here. Like, this is the safe place for it. Like, we're going to be here. We have time to be here.
And you're loved and you're accepted.
Yeah. Like, well, I had a student yesterday, like, they're texting me about different things and wanting to be at youth group and whatnot. And I told them, like, there's still time to come to youth group. Like, you don't have to not come. Like, there's always a place for you. There's always time for you. Like, there's no, just because you haven't been here, like, you can still come here. Like, it's always open. There's no pressure, basically.
Yeah. And kudos to you for cultivating that environment. That's super important for students. And good job doing that.
Yeah.
So as we look at this and as we embrace it or discuss it, how do you see the larger church embracing it? And how has it been a game changer for you?
Yeah. Well, I'll start on that one of how it kind of changed my, I don't know, view or just reality of church or whatnot. So when I lived in Nashville, I went there to work for a nonprofit missions organization, did that for a year. And then I worked with another church for a year doing student ministry. And like that church, I couldn't put my finger on the issue with that church until literally my last day. And I'd already made the decision to leave, and, I'm getting coffee with the worship minister, and she's saying, like, telling me about a story that with the kids director there. I did youth, and so I was 6 through 12, and kids was, like, pretty much K through 5. And she's saying, yeah, I was talking with the kids minister and just asking, like, yeah, did you ever get to know Thomas? And he made the comment, like, no, like, I like to keep my work and personal life separate. It's like, and that, like, alarm bells went off, because I grew up at peace, and like that was never the philosophy. And like, even as I was pursuing a church career or ministry career, like that was never the philosophy in my head. Like, if I'm working at a church, like I'm involved in that church, and like they're gonna see my stuff for better or worse. So I this is a job for everybody. Like, and that's not what church should be, or at least for the staff. Like, it is our job, but like, it's more than just a job, and that's what we had to wrestle with. So I left that church and landed a different church, and that's what that's basically in their mission statement, was like gospel culture. And so I'd hear all these sorts of stories of like ex-pastors or retired pastors or pastors that left their church for some sort of church hurt reason, and they were at that church and there was no expectation for them to be a pastor or to lead. They were just like, hey, like, we have leaders, we have people leading, like, come and receive. And for me, with that gospel culture, like, coming from a place of, okay, this was a job, and like, now my walk is a job with Christianity. Like, I'm obligated to serve the Lord and to minister to people. Like, I'm not doing it out of a freedom or a love for people. It's like, I need to serve God because it's my job to serve God. And like, that's not the right heart posture. And so when I came to this church, it's like, hey, like, just enjoy God. And that's where our discussion gets going, is like, just that enjoying versus doing for God and whatnot. But for me, like, I was able to take a step back, because at that point I was, 5 or 6 years into different ministries since graduating college, and or I guess leaving high school and different, I don't know, but I've been doing different ministry jobs, and I needed like a break in a way. And like, that break allowed me, and that like unburdenedness to just enjoy God, like, allowed me to want to serve God and whatnot. And so when I came here, like, because I was so impacted by gospel culture. Like, I wanted it to, I don't know, just put a name to it. Because I don't think Peace has not been doing gospel culture. Like, when I was thinking through, like, I think our love, equip, go statement is gospel culture. Like, we strive to love each other. We strive to love God. And, like, that's that sort of safety and being with one another. And we're equipping to go and, like, gospel saturated and all sorts of stuff. It was just, like, maybe just different words for the same thing. And so when it comes to, like, a full church body, I don't know, it's just getting everybody on that same page of, like, hey, Jesus loves you. You truly don't have to do anything more for Jesus, but because of that freedom to not have to do anything for Jesus, we get to go and do things for Jesus.
Which goes back to our mission statement, because of Jesus, we love, equip, go.
Yeah.
Very full circle.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I've been challenged by gospel culture. We've all been challenged by, I guess, wrestling, what does that look like? But, like, I do believe it's something that can really, I don't know, take the church to greater levels that we may not expect.
And in wrestling, hopefully you listened to the last episode.
Or hopefully not. Yeah, yeah, one of the two.
Either way. But it is good. It's a little bit of what we do around here. We chew on things. We discuss them. We kind of go round and round a little bit. But that kind of helps us to understand it more, to challenge each other more, and to have really healthy discussions. And that's kind of a micro of what we're hoping that the greater church is doing, that you're chewing on some of these things, that you're having some discussions, that you're having some thoughts and feelings behind what we're talking about on these podcasts.
Yeah, I think, and just on that, to echo that, I think on that gospel culture, I think we have to always wrestle with this balance between what I'm called to do for God and what my value is. Right. And I think that's why I really like gospel culture as another handle. You know, we're not going to change our vision statement. We're not going to change what we're about. But, like, as another handle for us to be able to talk about what's important, because I think gospel culture leads us to that understanding that we have to have the safety and time to understand where we need to grow, but that our value's in Jesus. And I think that does it so well. And allows us to have some other language to surround that journey with that we have of understanding my brokenness, understanding my values found in Jesus, but yet where does my service come from? Well, it comes because of Jesus. My love, equip, go, it comes because of Jesus and because of what he's done. And it fits our mission statement really well.
It seems like the piece that's missing out of the mission statement, though, is the time. Peace, right?
For love, equip, go.
Yeah.
How so? Or, like, I go, what do you mean by that?
That exactly what I said.
No, I think I see what you're saying. Like, there's no.
I'm asking the questions here, Thomas.
where is time in love, equip, go? And I think it is actually in the love and in the equip. Like, I think it's almost assumed there, because the way that we talk about love, equip, go, it's not you do this once and then you're ready. This is a cycle that every week we're coming to the church where we're loved and our values found in Jesus. Every week we're being sent out, or we're being equipped within our Bible studies, our small group, our worship services, our youth group, and then we're being sent out. Every week this cycle's happening, and that's where the time for me comes in. It's kind of implied in the cycle that we talk about with love, equip, go. And it's not a love, equip, go that you reach a certain point. It's rather this is a journey with Jesus for the rest of your life. And that's, I think, time's really implied in love, equip, go, in the way I conceptualize it anyway.
I see it even in going too. It's like there, if there's no time to go, which we all wrestle with, like we talked about last time, of like, hey, there's stuff to do, we got to get going. But like there is that freedom too, like I don't need to save this person right here and now. And like, that's that gospel culture. And that's what Jonathan Pilgrim is starting wrestling with his work coworkers, of like, yeah, I'm just, like, we have the time to love this person. And like in that going, like, I don't know. I've felt that pressure with past ministry experiences. Like, hey, like I need to rope this conversation around to Jesus some way or another. But it was like, after working through the joining Jesus stuff, like, well, like we're Jesus around the dinner table is what we're doing, and dinner happens every night.
Yeah, we heard that from Brad also, to really just take time with people. And it doesn't have, this may be the starting point, but God's got the rest. He's got what's going to come later
and
on.
I think that's like that pressure. So when it comes to like the whole church body, like gospel culture, for me, it's like pressure's off. Like you have the time to be free and to just be with people. And through that being, like, that's where the doing of the gospel and sharing it comes with. And maybe that's what intimidates some of our members of going. It's like, oh, I got to have all the answers right here now. It's like, no, like, in a gospel culture, you have the safety and time to fail and to not get it all right, but to also just be with people.
Yeah. So what are some of the barriers that keep someone from experiencing the fullness of gospel culture? I'm going to go to you first, Thomas.
Yeah. I think church hurt in the past. It's like whether you're a longtime churchgoer or never been to church before, you're bringing something with you. And if it is something from another church, like that's going to impact your experience of this church. Like, is this church do the same thing my other church did? Or do they do it different? Or is it worse here? Is it better here? And like there's that level of comparison. I like what pastor's kind of been mentioning throughout our conversations of like, I don't know, it's like this reverse safety in a way is how I'm kind of, I got to think through it, but like, I don't know, that vulnerability to be safe, I think is what we need. I forgot the question and now I'm rambling again.
No, you're good, but I want you to stay on that for a second. What do you mean?
Reverse safety? Yeah. I'm trying to think. I had that come in mind when Pastor was talking, but I guess if we're striving to be a church that is safe and with people, maybe it's like fake safety, maybe rather than reverse safety. It's like I say, yeah, I don't even know if I understand what I'm saying now, but like we strive and we proclaim to be this safe place, but
in my heart of hearts, I'm not quite there yet.
Or I'm not sharing what I'm really feeling. Cause it like, I know I can be vulnerable with people, but I can also not really share what's going on. Like I can give enough to people. Yeah. It's like, yeah, like,
oh look at him being so vulnerable.
Yeah. But yeah, like deep down, maybe he's not that good. And it's like, that's the sort of vulnerability that's hard. It's hard for everybody to like truly find those people to share with. And that's not, you don't need to be safe with every single person in the church. Yeah. Like that's not what it's about, but like finding those people you can be safe with and being a church that helps, I don't know.
Yeah, it's almost as a difference. There's a difference in saying that we're a safe place and actually living out the fact that we're a safe place. Like, I think it's great to say that we're safe, but I think the question in the back of our minds would be, if I really said this, whatever it is, if I really said this, what would my church think about me? Like, and I think there's a point that we all like ask that question, and it's easy to say in theory that we're safe, but if we don't actually have church friends where we can share all of it with them, then we don't know the depth of that safety that might or might not exist.
So the picture that comes to my mind, I don't know if you guys remember Snoopy cartoons, Charlie Brown, and there was Pigpen. Right? And he was a filthy mess. But they loved him.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter how dirty and messy Pigpen really was. He was loved and accepted by that group of people. We come with the seen messiness, and we come with the unseen messiness. And when I walk into the building, are you going to be repelled by my messiness, whether it's seen or it's unseen? And if I understand who I am in Christ, if I understand my mission, if I really am bearing good fruit, right, then I'm accepting. But there might be a part of myself that has to battle. Can I do it in a loving way that's not just giving permission to it also?
Yeah, because we want to be...
That was really good, that by the way. Good. I thought that was good.
I'm glad you thought so.
Yeah. Mentioned last time, like this, so a non-believer looks at a church and is like, I don't want to go there. There's just a bunch of like saints that think they're better than everybody. And it's like, what a gospel culture does for a church body. The unbeliever who doesn't go to that church can think whatever they want, but hopefully that church truly is like, hey, like, I know I'm not perfect. I'm not trying to be perfect at church. I'm trying to just receive the grace of God as I need it daily. And I understand I'm broken, and you're not hiding your brokenness in a way. Like, I get, we're not acting like Adam and Eve in the garden hiding from God. Like, we can, I guess this is talking about our relationship with one another. It's like, we need to be visible. We need to walk in the light with one another, because that's where real change comes. And that vulnerability to do so, and that culture becomes one of, hey, I'm going to be real with everybody here.
I agree with that. I 100%, because I think there's an authenticity that happens when I can say, hey, this is my struggle. This is the load I've been carrying. Or as George Dyer would say, my sack of rocks, here they are. But I think we also have to give permission for time.
Yeah.
And for people to find their safe place within the church body.
Yeah.
To say, this is my bag of rocks.
Because I've heard the term, we can hotwire intimacy pretty quick, meaning like, hey, like there's this game, I forget what it's called, but like, you got a minute on the hot seat. And so in 1 minute you can ask whatever you want of that person, and like, they cannot ask or answer if they don't want to, but you're basically trying to get to the deep dark, like, immediately. So there's like this Gen Z term called trauma dumping. It's like, hey, let's all share our trauma so that we can bond over it. It's like, well, you don't need to do that. Like, a gospel-centered, gospel-cultured time.
That sounds awful, by the way. I'm not playing that
trauma
game.
Trauma dumping.
I'm not down for that. We do need to call Betsy back for that. Oh, that's
But it's
terrible.
like time, like, yeah, I want to hear those things, but I want to hear them with you knowing that I actually care about it. I'm not just trying to learn all your deep darks just so I know about it. It's like, no, I'm walking life with you. I want to know what you're going through.
And that's what sounds terrible about trauma dumping. Like, it's almost dumping for the sake of dumping.
Yeah.
I want to do it in a caring relationship. I want to do it with somebody that's going to help me not just unpack it, but know what to do with it after that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, like, that would just be hard.
I think it happens for, this is me speculating and a side note, but I think it happens for why it's become a Gen Z thing is because we want that community, we want that rich community, and we don't know how to get it. So let me share all my vulnerable stuff with you so that we kind of know each other. Now we can say we're friends rather than, I don't know, walking the walk with each other.
Yeah, I've seen some TikToks like that, oh, you share that, I can share worse. And it's tough. It's very tough.
And what keeps coming to my mind as we're talking is, like, fully known, fully loved. Like, isn't that what Christ gives to us?
It's a sticker.
Right?
Yeah.
Somebody else came up with that. I've heard him say it before, but fully known, fully loved. But, like, that's what Jesus Christ gave to us, right? He knows all our mess ups, all our brokenness, and yet he still died on the cross for us. But I think, like, we get to embody that in community. Like, that one of the greatest things for me is that my wife knows just how broken I am and she still loves me, right? Like, and we need that in community. And I probably need more than just my wife to know how broken I am but still love me. And I think in this gospel-centered culture, again, it's this verse from 1 John 1:7. We read it last week. But if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, right? Why do we have fellowship? Well, we're walking in that light, the truth of Jesus, that I'm broken, but also the truth of Jesus, that the blood of Jesus purifies us from all sin, right? Right? And that's, but I think gospel culture is to say, to me, what I'm learning is not just to say that Jesus has done this for us, but how do we embody that for each other, that fully known and fully loved?
When I was going through the divorce, I had a church member who came up one Sunday. My son was back in town, and they came up to greet him and then turned to me and said, I'm just so sad and I'm just so hurt. And I looked at them and I said, me too. And it was really, it was this really beautiful moment of vulnerability on their part of what they were feeling towards it, and opportunity for me to affirm by how I was feeling also. And, you know, it's not always in the in the trauma dump ways, but it's also the come alongside ways of, this is my feeling in this moment. I'm hurt and I'm sad. Me too. Yeah. And we don't always have to bring this huge clarity. I'm carrying a huge rock in my sack of rocks, and I just need somebody to know that and to remind me that I'm loved and I'm forgiven. And I love that, fully known, yeah, fully loved. Yeah, we are. We are. And what great peace that brings. It almost takes me back to that song, It Is Well With My Soul, you know, when I'm fully loved and fully known, man.
Yeah, and as we've been talking through gospel culture, that fully known, fully loved starts to stick out to me. And maybe as I've started to wrestle with gospel culture, like, that's what it's all about. Like, gospel culture really is just all about being known. Like, you have the safety and time to be known. Like, we're all fully known by God already, but are we fully known by our neighbor? Do we want to be fully known by anybody? Like, I think that's something I struggle with. I'm sure everyone wants to hide. And it's like getting out of ourselves to, like, hey, this is me, like, good and bad, like, here I am, and like, let's walk the walk together. And because we can't do it alone, that's what Ecclesiastes says, like, two is better than one. One can lift another up. And so we can walk it alone, but we can't do gospel culture alone.
What was it? You and I were in my office a few weeks ago, and we were having a conversation, and I think you asked me, what's the end scene, or what's one of your big, what was one of my biggest struggles or failures or something like that? And I, literally, I've known you forever, and I stopped and I was like, I don't know if I want to tell you.
Can I share this with this person?
Yeah. And there was really a moment of, what are you going to do with this? What's going to happen? I chose to be vulnerable and I chose to be open. But it took me a minute. I thought about it a second. And I think even if we can get to the doorstep of that, right?
Yeah.
Even if we can ask the question and accept that somebody might not be ready, or they might be ready. I wasn't ready to hear yours, so I didn't ask you the same thing. But I think to go ahead and to ask somebody, and not maybe not that question, but to lead
What's
them there.
What's the worst thing you've ever done?
Yeah. And I think that's probably the thing for our leaders. We always wrap this around to, what can our leaders take away? But I think it's understanding relationships are needed. Relationships can go deep. Don't live in that space. That's, if we're constantly heavy and deep, I'm going to start avoiding you. But to be real in who we are, to be real where we are, and to remind each other that we are fully loved and we are fully accepted by a God that is amazing and wonderful and loving.
Yeah, and if there's going to be like a tangible, like, here's what leaders can do from this, like, maybe it's just asking people, how are you doing? Like, what's going on?
And then wait for the answer.
Yeah, like, don't, like, it's easy to be uncomfortable and like, oh, you don't have to share, it's okay. But like, get sitting in that like silence or that awkward, like, that can go a long way to leaders. Because, I mean, vulnerability has to start with somebody. Like, we can talk vulnerability all day, but if no one wants to be vulnerable, then no one else is going to be vulnerable. And so who's going to be the brave soul that's like, yeah, here's what's going on? It's like, oh, because usually when that's what trauma dumping does, and we're not trying to trauma dump, but like, when you share something about yourself, someone else is going to share something about them. And it's like, it goes back and forth, but that's what relationship is. And we're trying to do it in a healthy way. Not trauma dump.
Yeah. On our next podcast, we're going to trauma dump.
I'm not on that one, by the way.
Pastor, you get the last word. What stands out to you in these past two podcasts, and what would you like for our leaders to really camp?
Yeah, I just think encouraging and embodying the fact that you love people not for what they bring to the table ultimately, but that they're loved in Jesus Christ, like that. Fully known and fully loved, like, and how do you embody that in your leadership? And I love that. I haven't thought about that. How do we create opportunities in the questions we ask for people to allow us the privilege of knowing them more fully so that we can love them more fully?
Great. Thank you so much for joining us, Thomas. Thank you for listening today, and we hope you have a great week.